Blog Talk Radio.
With the 28th pick in the 2015 NFL Draft, the Detroit Lions select Laken Tomlinson.
Oh!
Guard, Duke.
A pretty picture paints a thousand words. Now look at yours today. It's been a while, the dust has long set in. You still look the same. So where do we go from here? Where do we go from here?
Well, that's the essential question this week at another episode of the Detroit Sports Show. Where do the Detroit Lions go from here? 2015 NFL Draft is over, and we're going to look at the whole picture tonight. And, well, before we do that, welcome to another episode of the Detroit Sports Show. I'm your host, Samara. I'm back in the host chair this week. The Tigers are out of town, and they're off anyway. So, as everyone knows, I'm pretty Tigers heavy in my life, so that gives me a moment to catch my breath, and it gives me a moment to slide back into the host chair and give these other two a break. And, of course, those other two are Chris Burke and Andrew Tomlinson. You can get Chris Burke on Twitter at ChrisBurke_SI and Andrew Tomlinson on Twitter at Drew_Tomlinson. And I'll bring in Chris first. I mean, short on sleep probably after this draft process, but long on ambition, as he told me he was just now in the process of getting to his 2016 mock draft. I don't know how you do it, Chris. I mean, you turn around, you watch it all happen, and then you got to turn around and, boom, we're already projecting what's going to happen next year. Isn't that crazy?
I was trying to go back through and figure out how I did with last year's mock draft, the one right after, and I went back and pulled it up from the Tuesday after the draft, and I had Tampa Bay picking Winston and Mariota picking Tennessee picking Mariota, so the bar is high for the 2016 mock draft. I got to get at least a couple right to keep the momentum going.
Wow, that's impressive. And you know, maybe Connor Cook, Michigan State product, goes top 10. Who knows? He said maybe that's what's going to happen. So just
Houston,
a spoiler alert there, not to make the SI bosses a little upset. But and of course, our other guest, needs no introduction. He's been smiling since Thursday night. You could probably see his smile nationwide, Andrew Tomlinson. He's not related to Laken Tomlinson, the Lions' first-round pick, but from now on, we're just going to go ahead and say he is. So let's bring in Laken Tomlinson's brother from another mother here, Andrew Tomlinson. Do you have the jersey on order yet, Andrew? I mean, is it ready to go?
I really need him to pick his number because I can't order it until I know what his number is. But you know as soon as he picks that,
you can get the
one. I want to be Laken Tomlinson's number one fan with
that's fair.
The best jersey money can buy. He is essentially like the football playing version of me. Soft spoken. Well, I guess I'm not that soft spoken. Loves video games. Like, this guy is me that plays football.
Well, I told you how disappointed I was when the Pistons didn't take Trey Burke, because that was going to be the first and only Pistons jersey I've ever bought in my entire life if they had taken Trey Burke.
Yeah,
you know, I don't think there's any demerits coming down the line, so I don't have anything to worry about there for sure. Well, you know what? We're going to jump right in and talk about it. We'll talk more about Laken Tomlinson in a moment, but we're supposed to be joined by Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press. He'll call in at around 7:15. We'll ask him some of the tough questions about the NFL draft. He did an excellent job covering it over the weekend. I'm sure he's short on sleep, too, so I feel very blessed to have him joining us tonight on no doubt what is short notice and short rest for him. But we'll jump in first. And, you know, I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts overall on the draft. You know, if you had to grade it, Andrew, what grade would you give the Lions draft, top to bottom? You know, what did you think of the Laken Tomlinson pick and, of course, how they continued going on round by round? You know, just assess it a letter grade and give me some basic thoughts on everything.
I think I'll start overall draft and then go in if that's all right, because I think that I'll make the larger justification and then for the late game pick. I think overall it's good to be. I think it's a solid draft. It's not anything that they didn't reach for any players, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. That's usually how you end up with an A. You get kind of those boomer bust players that could be super amazing or it could be terrible, right? Like if you look at the year they drafted Nick Fairley, that was essentially why I believe they got an A. I think that year was because Fairley was supposed to be amazing. Didn't turn out that way. They filled needs, two corners, defensive tackle, ended up picking up two offensive guards. They ended up picking up an offensive tackle who I thought was supposed to go earlier in the draft and ended up going rather far down. So I think he could be a nice addition. Add the fullback. I have more thoughts on that one. I think it makes sense. But I think, and obviously Abdullah, I think it's a B. I mean, they did well enough to fill what they needed. And I think the Lakin pick gets an A. There's no way you don't give that pick an A when you picked up another veteran player, Manny Ramirez, who the man ran, who has played well for the Broncos over time and has actually been, I think it was a couple years ago, Pro Football Focus rated him as one of the top interior offensive linemen in football. And you added additional picks and then filled the need with a guard who is supposed to be the kind of bookend guard isn't right because it's usually bookend tackles, but the kind of bookend guard realistically that could play for the Lions for 10 years that's going to be able to go opposite Warford and just open up massive running holes. There's no way that doesn't get an A. I think the fullback was the weakest pick, but it makes sense. Pro Football Focus, again, rated him as of all fullbacks in the Football Bowl series last year as the most productive fullback in the league. And so when you look at that as a draft strategy and you see a player that you want, I have a hard time arguing with the justification of we saw him, we wanted to make sure we got him, we picked him. So I think it's a B. I think it's I thought it was fine.
So, Chris, take off your analyst hat for a minute and, just, you can slide on that Lions fan hat. Now, what grade would you give it and what did you think of the whole draft?
No, I think I'm with – I think I'm with Andrew in that B, probably a B. I mean, to me, the two keys, the trade down for Tomlinson, I mean, that was one of the better moves, really. There were some steals in rounds 4, 5, 6, but that was one of the better early moves that we saw because not only do you get your starter, and now you have Warford Tomlinson together, but that Manny Ramirez comes back, and he's a guy that can help you really at all three. He played center for the Broncos last year, so he can help you at center. He can help you at either of those guard spots where they're young and don't have a lot of depth, assuming Travis Swanson is going to be your starting center. So I think that was a great move. You pick up an extra couple picks. I mean, it's hard to argue with that. Tomlinson, some people probably would say they reached a little at 28, but I think at that point, you're getting a guy that's going to be a starter for you. I don't think in any way he would have been there at round two. I think maybe the Patriots, even at the end of round one, but someone in the top 40 was going to take him. So I have no problem at all with what they did there. Amir Abdullah, for me, was the number three back in his class behind Gordon and Gurley. And there was a drop-off, but not a huge one. I mean, he's still a guy that can do a lot of things for you out of the backfield. I mean, he makes some plays that are pretty Gurley-esque. Matt, you guys might remember that touchdown they kept showing against Minnesota last year where he ran through like four tackles. I mean, he's a really good running back and different than what they have. So I was really impressed with the first two rounds. I have my questions from there. I don't know. I mean, I think Alex Carter can be solid. I'm not sold on him. I think Quandre Diggs can be okay in the slot. That's certainly a need for them. The Gabe Wright pick, trading up for him, I mean, we'll get into that more with Dave. That one didn't – I wasn't thrilled about that idea. Burton – Burton is the pick I think solidifies the plan to run the ball a lot more effectively. They needed a fullback. Jed Collins is gone. It's pretty clear that this is going to be – at least they're going to try to be more balanced than they have been.
Yeah, I agree with you. In fact, for me, it starts with the trade. The trade was, I thought, was brilliant because, like you said, you get Manny Ramirez, who's, everybody likes to point to that snap in the Super Bowl, but the Lions aren't going to be asking him to do that. They're not going to be asking him to play center unless Travis Swanson gets hurt or something happens along the line. And that's nice to have a guy, a veteran, that you can plug and play at multiple different positions like that along the line who's very steady. So I think he's only improved since he left the Lions. now comes back a more well-rounded player. You get him, you get a couple picks, and you're able to get the guy you really wanted anyway in Laken Tomlinson. You can't complain about that. I thought that was a good move. Abdullah, yeah, I think that was a good move too. Like Andrew and I talked about at the end of the last show, you know, I had absolutely no problem with them going after him because, you know, he's the guy that he can hit a home run at any time. He's, you know, we've watched enough of him being in Big Ten country these last couple of years to know that, you know, he's a guy that can really carry the load. And he's, I call him small but mighty. He keeps churning the legs. He's got another cut in him. And it seems when he gets in the open field, he's got another dimension. I mean, he had that incredible touchdown against Murray State that saved their season, essentially, last year. He can catch the ball out of the backfield and do all kinds of things. So I think he fits the offense well. I don't know about him in a special teams role, which I'll be interested to see if they do anything like that. I heard some rumblings that may be a part of the plan. And then from there, you know, I don't know. I'm going to have to be that guy. I'm not sure that I didn't understand the Carter pick. I guess you understand it from the standpoint that he's a Stanford defensive back, and they have had success in the NFL. Going back to Richard Sherman now, who's come out of nowhere to be the best corner in the game. But and you know, he just doesn't have those interception numbers that you like to see. But as Andrew pointed out to me on Twitter, neither does Jarrell Revis, which is true. So if he can lock down this guy, that pick will look a lot better. Yeah, trading up for Gabe Wright when Michael Bennett was probably going to be available to them. I don't know about that move. We'll have to see. You know, he's kind of a guy that needs a motor, you know, need a new motor at times. You know, the fullback, questionable because you don't really know what you're going to get from him. You know he's going to help you run the ball, essentially, but he's not going to run the ball himself, and they're certainly not going to pass it to him a whole lot. It's not like Jed Collins was catching the ball a whole lot last year. So I just felt like he might be available in the later rounds, and they could have done something else in the fifth round. But I think they closed it strong, very strong, in fact, with Quandre Diggs, who I really like. Good hitter, tough player, very tough. And he comes from an NFL background, being a Quinn Jammer as his brother. And Corey Robinson, who I wrote about at Sideline Report today. I mean, I love that pick. I think that kid has an absolute chance to make the team, not just make the team, but be a great tackle for years. He's got a lot of Cornelius Lucas in him, I think. Big guy. You know, maybe not, there's questions about his feet, maybe not the fastest guy, most athletic guy, but I think he's a guy that can quietly become one of the better picks in this entire draft. And that's where I'm going to transition from there. I mean, Chris, I'll start with you. Who do you think the one player is that's going to be looked upon as the best player to come out of this draft for the Lions? Who do you have your eyes set on as maybe that guy to turn everybody's head? Is it a later round guy, or is it a guy, you know, one of the first couple picks that they made?
Yeah, that Abdullah run that you talked about, that Murray State one, I don't know why I said Minnesota, but yeah, that was the same one I was talking about. And Robinson, too, I think it was a good pick. That Cornelius Lucas makes sense. I was sort of thinking Jason Fox, similar, you know, the same type
yeah.
of big guy, and you hope he develops. I mean, I think Tomlinson will be really solid. I think their hope is that Carter Wright is the best player. I have a feeling it's going to be Abdullah, especially in this offense. And they have a couple guys that I think can play similar roles. I mean, we saw some of Theo Riddick last year, but I think we're going to see Abdullah handle some carries. I think, you know, you're basically, he's probably not as electric in the open field as a healthy Reggie Bush, but how healthy was Reggie Bush in Detroit? How when was he ever healthy? I mean, I think he's going to be a long-term answer for them in the backfield, both as a run threat and as a passing threat. And certainly for as much as this team throws the ball, you need that back that can come out of the backfield and make catches. And you need the guy who can help block. He's pretty good at that. I think that's, again, we'll talk to Dave in a few minutes here. It wouldn't surprise me if Joik Bell's playing time is diminished quite a bit this season because Amir Abdullah is there.
Who do you think is the best player, is going to be the best player, Andrew? Is it Abdullah, or are you looking at a lower-round guy?
I wasn't especially thrilled with the Abdullah pick. Personally, I thought that there were better defensive players available. That was obviously before Carl Davis and Michael Bennett fell multiple rounds. But I think, for me, the pick that I'm most intrigued by is the Quandre Diggs pick. I watched a highlight reel from him out of Texas because I didn't know anything about him, and he can make moves in space. I wouldn't be shocked if he makes the team and does some punt or kick return. He did it for Texas, and he made guys miss. I think he could be a sneaky little player that when a Bill Bentley or an Evan Lawson inevitably goes down, has a real impact on the team. He doesn't seem like a real hothead, but he seems like he's able to find the ball in space, close on it. I think his closing speed was what was most striking to me. Now, obviously, it was a highlight reel, so I didn't see all the times that he didn't close. But I think he could be someone that ends up having a pretty significant role in this following season when you think about guys that he's going to have to cover, like Kevin White and I think went to the Bears, and, unless I got that totally wrong, and Randall Cobb in Green Bay. So I think he's going to be the one that I'm most intrigued by.
Yeah, and for me, I think I stay with Robinson. I don't know why. Something about him and the size of him makes me just excited to see what he can do. Well, right now we are excited to bring in Dave Burkett. Dave, of course, works for the Free Press. You can get him on Twitter, at Dave Burkett. Dave, how are you doing this evening? Thanks for joining us and taking some time out of a busy schedule. You know, everybody that covers this is short on sleep and long on exhaustion by the time it's over. How are you holding up?
Doing pretty good. You know, got to catch up on family time yesterday. I just a little bummed now we got to spend Mother's Day out at rookie camp this coming weekend. But, hey, such are the perils of life, I guess. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. We're just recapping the Lions draft and thought we'd get you in for a couple questions. I'll start you off with one about, of course, Laken Tomlinson, the top pick. The Lions traded back. They were able to get a couple extra picks. Manny Ramirez comes back in the interior. But they select another guard, Laken Tomlinson from Duke. Smart kid, good kid. Some people thought it might have been a reach considering Tomlinson might go in the second round. Where do you stand on that? Do you think it was a reach for the Lions to get to trade back and then select Tomlinson at the end of the first round? Or do you think they liked him that much that they knew somebody was going to nab him at the end of the first round, perhaps the beginning of the second round, if they didn't essentially make a move?
Yeah, no, I don't think it was much of a reach. I mean, I think we're kind of parsing hairs on where he would have gone. You know, a couple of days before the draft in our offensive line preview, I wrote he was pretty solidly in the second round and could sneak into the first. And, you know, maybe they overdrafted him by a few picks, but he definitely wasn't going to be there when they came back around. And, you know, he was, frankly, probably the best lineman on the board at that time. And that's what the Lions' biggest need was, offensive line. And, you know, he's a clean prospect, a really good player. He's you know, probably not as good a guard as Brandon Scherff was going to be or Lael Collins had he not had the issues. But I think the Lions, even though it's not the sexy pick, I thought it was the right thing for them to do to take Laken Tomlinson right there.
Well, that leads in perfectly to my next question is, you know, which player do you think fits the Lions best this year from this draft? Is it a guy like Tomlinson right away, perhaps Abdullah? Or do you look at one of those, you know, later round picks as kind of maybe a long shot, but can come in and kind of open eyes out of nowhere? Who do you think is the best overall fit for the Lions out of this class?
Well, I think the couple guys up top are definitely going to play, Laken Tomlinson and Amir Abdullah. There's no doubt that both those guys fill an immediate, you know, need on the team. And you know, they were both probably drafted about where they were expected to go. Abdullah, you could parse hairs with, too. You know, he was in a strong running back class. Maybe he was a third-round guy. But the Lions liked his speed. They thought he was a good fit for their backfield. They think he has some return ability that might be able to play for them too, an area that, you know, they spent a lot of, you know, resources this offseason looking at some upgrades for that area. So I think both those guys will have an immediate role. And, you know, you look at the defensive tackle they drafted in the fourth round as well, trading up to get him. He's, you know, he's going to be a rotational guy, but at the end of the day, I think he's a guy that kind of fits what they're looking for, a young, developmental sort of tackle as well.
Hey, Dave, Chris Burke here. Glad you made it through
What's up, Chris?
The weekend unscathed. pick up, you meant with the rookie minicamp, and you're talking about Abdullah. Another sort of interesting undrafted signing for them, Zach Zenner, out of South Dakota State, was a guy I thought would get drafted somewhere. I thought the Cowboys or someone would nab him in those late rounds. But Abdullah looks like he's probably ticketed for a decent amount of carries. And you still have Riddick. Maybe Zenner makes the roster. What do you see Joik Bell's role at going forward? Is he still locked in as the number one guy? Is he going to start giving up carries to these other players?
Yeah, no, I think for now he's the number one guy, but and you know he had a pretty good year last year. He's again not maybe the flashiest running back, but he's been productive. He always seems to get some yards after contact, and I know that's something that this staff values, his ability to break some tackles. You know, he's 29 though, and you know, running backs only have a short shelf life, and I know they signed him to a 3-year deal last year, but he is not going to be a bell cow that's going to carry the bulk of the work, I think, over a 16-game season, or at least the guy that, you know, when the Lions wanted to add a little juice to the running game, not the guy that they wanted to be counting on for that. So, Joyke Bell's still going to be the number one guy this year, at least at the start. You know, Abdullah is definitely going to push in for carries. I don't think Riddick's role is going to change much from what it was last year, more of a receiving threat out of the backfield. I think there's enough carries for those first two guys to go around, and then just kind of, you know, ride the hot hand, and eventually Joyke cedes his spot to, you know, Amir Abdullah.
And then that Gabe Wright pick, you mentioned trading up for him. Sort of interesting, last offseason, obviously, one of the big storylines with the Lions not picking up Nick Fairley's contract option, and then he left this offseason, and now they draft the guy who replaced him at Auburn, and at least from John Paper, is pretty similar player, same size and does a lot of the same things, or at least did a lot of the same things for Auburn. So is this, not to get too nitpicky about it, but is this a smart sort of backup plan after having lost Fairley, or does this highlight that they should have just picked up Fairley's contract option?
Yeah, no, ironic what's going on there to go to Auburn to get another guy. Well, you know, look, I'm definitely of the belief that they should have picked up Nick Fairley's option last year. Having talked to, you know, plenty of Lions people over the past 12 months, and the fact that they didn't really make any sort of push to sign him in the offseason, it's clear, you know, what they thought of him and some of the issues that he had with motor and work ethic and weight. Even though he did seem to turn a corner in at least the weight issue last year, the injury is obviously another factor as well. But I think that's what the Lions got here. They got a savings. You know, he's a cheaper player. He's not nearly as talented as Nick Fairley. I don't think there's a whole lot of defensive tackles in the NFL who are. But they got a cheaper, rotational guy. And the one thing that Terrell Austin made a point of on Saturday when he was talking about that pick, he said Gabe has somebody asked him about his motor, and he said, no, he's got a motor. He's got a really good motor. And I think that was, you know, the underlying question there was, is he just like Nick Fairley? And, you know, I think Terrell, you know, answered that and saying, no, this guy can penetrate and he's going to play hard.
We have Dave Burkett from the Detroit Free Press on. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Burkett, B-I-R-K-E-T-T. Dave, Andrew Thompson here. Wanted to see your thoughts on the DBs that they drafted. I mean, if you look at Mayhew's draft history with defensive backs, you have Lawson last year, Slay the year before, and then the year before that you have Bentley, Greenwood, and Green. Only really Slay has been a viable defensive back in the league. It looks like Jonte Green's now going to be out of the league. What makes Quandre Diggs and Alex Carter different? Are they going to contribute to the Lions in their careers, or are they look more like past DBs that he's drafted?
No, you're 100% right. Throw Amari Spivey in that mix too. You know, a guy like that who they thought was maybe a cornerback, eventually couldn't cut it there, had to move to safety. And yeah, for a guy that played cornerback, his track record drafting those guys hasn't been the best. But look, you know, I think with Carter, you know, that's a young guy. He's played 3 years of college football, and he's got really good bloodlines. He's a pretty good athlete when you check out Spark scores and some of those metrics. You know, he's big, he's long, he's physical. He's kind of the type of cornerback that they want. Now, I don't think he's going to have much of a role as a rookie. Slay, Rasheem Mathis, you know, even Josh Wilson, the nickel cornerback that they signed, I think those will be your top three cornerbacks this year. But Carter's a guy that has enough upside that, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, we may look back on this pick and say, that was a pretty good third-round pick by Martin Mayhew. So that's what the Lions hope for, at least. You know, I'm not sure about Quandre Diggs. I think he has a shot to make the team. I think Bill Bentley, end of the day, could end up being the odd man out there. But neither one of those young guys, Lawson or Bentley, has proven much yet, and both obviously are coming off some season-ending injuries. So Diggs is the type of competitor, small guy, probably best suited for some nickel duty. But he's the type of guy who could, you know, have a big preseason, a big training camp, pick things up quickly, and prove to the coaches that he deserves a spot on the 53-man roster.
Well, all right, Dave, we'll let you out of here on this one. Let you get back to your family time after being away and being buried in papers and internet and everything. Everybody points to the different needs the Lions filled, you know, defensive tackle, offensive line. They did a great job filling needs, cornerback. I was curious, what do you think about the positions of need that maybe they didn't fill? Which one do you think is most glaring? They didn't take a wide receiver the first time in Martin Mayhew's tenure, I think, that they didn't take a wide receiver, and they didn't take a defensive end after losing George Johnson. I thought maybe they would get a guy later in the rounds maybe to work in there. What do you think is the position that you were most stunned that they didn't take, and do you think it's a big deal, essentially, at the end of the day?
No, you know, I mean, I was a little surprised that they didn't draft a receiver just because Martin has drafted so many of those guys over the years. But, you know, you look at the fact that they didn't get one in the first couple rounds. The guy was not, in all likelihood, going to be a core player for this team and this offense going forward. So I don't think that's a huge need. Truthfully, you know, I know I got a couple questions about James Jones, who was released, and whether the Lions could get in the mix on him. They liked him when he was a free agent last year. You know, there were some people that thought that they were going to sign him. You know, they saw Corey Fuller take some steps forward last year. I'm not sure if they have the same need for a James Jones or a similar type receiver going forward. I don't know that that's a huge need. I think what they need more than anything is a young guy that you can look and point to as the eventual replacement for Kelvin Johnson. And obviously you're just not going to get that right now or where they were going to take one in the draft. So to me, I still think it's defensive line. I still think they could use a little more help at the defensive tackle spot, even more than end. I don't know what who the available vets are that are out there, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if they still brought in another rotational C.J. Mosley-type defensive tackle to be a contributor on this defensive line this year.
Well, always great to talk to you, Dave. Thanks for your insight. I'm sure we'll do it again as the season progresses and gets nearer to training camp. And, you know, it was 80-some degrees today in Detroit the last couple of days. It almost feels like training camp weather, does it not? I mean, it's almost time. It's close. It'll be here before you know it.
It feels like summer. It feels like it's time to take a break from football for a minute and recharge the batteries. Hopefully, maybe after minicamp, we can all do that. So, appreciate it, guys, and keep up good work.
Excellent. Talk to you later, Dave. That's Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press. Like we said, you can get him on Twitter at Dave Burkett. Always good for a laugh as well. In addition to great information. Since I really didn't get to finish my thought because Dave came on, I just wanted to continue part of what I was saying about the offensive tackle. I believe the Lions got with Corey Robinson. I think they got a great player. Just the size alone and the fact that he does compare to me to Cornelius Lucas. I think, and who played well last year, I thought, given, you know, it's often hard for those guys to come in, especially an undrafted free agent, and make an impact. And as Dave said on Twitter over the weekend, you know, had Robinson not signed with or been drafted by the Lions, he had a lot of teams after him ready to sign him as undrafted free agent. So he's one of those priority guys. And so the Lions wasted no time taking him. And I think that says something. It'll be very interesting to see how he progresses. And I think that, you know, that there was a need there at tackle, and they filled it. Quickly, I want to get your guys' thoughts here. We have some time. We can delve more into the Lions draft. We don't have to get right into the Tigers just yet. They're off tonight, so I'm Tigers-free right now. So I'm going to kick back and relax. I'll ask you guys the same question I asked Dave because I'm curious to know. I'll start with you, Andrew. Was there a position that you were kind of disappointed that the Lions didn't take? Was it the receiver? Or do you feel like, Dave, that maybe they've got enough guys there? Or was it, you know, the defensive line? Did they not take enough tackles or maybe an end? What position kind of left you scratching your head, like, why wouldn't they draft that guy at the end of the day?
I think it was two for me. I think it was the end. I was really surprised they didn't take an end. Sure, they have Ansa and they have Jones and they have DT and Daryl Tapp off the end, but I wouldn't say they have an overabundance of amazing ends. I don't expect anyone to come in and put up the production that George Johnson did last year. At the same time, I was sort of surprised they didn't take a linebacker. They're sort of in this weird spot where people have wondered if they're switching defenses from 4-3 to 3-4 because they did bring in Nada, who is traditionally a nose tackle. I believe Gabe Wright is traditionally a nose tackle. And they have the four linebackers to run it in Whitehead, Vannoy, Levy, and Tulloch. But that's really it. And you've talked about linebacker depth, and we're not really even sure if Levy's going to be here next year. He's going to be in line for a big payday, and they haven't signed him to an extension yet. So you don't really have enough personnel to run the 4-3 or really even the right personnel, and you really don't have the right personnel to run a 3-4. So I'm sort of surprised they didn't add either a linebacker or defensive end. I was sort of waiting for that move to come. I mean, maybe Carter ends up playing some linebacker. I don't know. Usually some guys that move to safety could also move to linebacker. He's probably a little too big, but I was really surprised they didn't add either of those spots.
I mean, I think it's wide receiver.
Was it receiver? Yeah, me too. That's what my thought was.
I get what Dave's saying. I think that the big goal for them, and probably as early as round one next year, you have to start looking wide receiver, because we've seen what happens when Calvin Johnson gets hurt. We know that he's kind of just battered in general now. He's not, you know, he kind of reminds me almost of like Pavel Datsyuk. You know, you know he's incredible when he's healthy, but he's rarely 100% anymore. And it's sort of the same thing. You've got to start planning for the future at some point. He'll be 30 in September. So I think that I get the argument, you know, round three, round four, you're not going to find anyone. But at the same time, I don't even know what their plan is behind Tate and Johnson. I mean, I guess you hope Corey Fuller takes the next step. TJ Jones, if he's healthy, I mean, I don't think you can count necessarily on Ryan Broyles at this point, given how banged up he's been, all the trouble with his knee. So, I mean, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of, you're going to see a lot of Pettigrew, Ebron, Fourier, and the two running backs. I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of mix and match, but that doesn't solve your wide receiver problem. So that was the one for me. I was really surprised, especially in those mid rounds. It was such a deep receiver draft that I thought for sure, you know, in round two, round three. So, I mean, the Seahawks went up and got Tyler Lockett in round three. That was a guy I thought would have fit in pretty well. Sammy Coates was a round three guy, a big body outside. I mean, there were guys up and down. Trey McBride really was the one for me. If you're talking about one guy late round, just take a swing at someone. I thought not just the Lions, I thought several teams would be looking at Trey McBride because he can make a lot of those tough catches outside. So that was the position, I think. And like you said, because of Mayhew's past, like what we've seen from him, you expected to draft a receiver.
I was stunned to learn that this was the first draft that he had never taken a wide receiver. I mean, it makes sense when you go back, you know. So the Lions fans have nothing to complain about this year. There's no wide receiver pick. There's no albatross hanging over everyone's neck that, you know, this guy isn't going to be a great player because we took a swing on him too early. They don't even have to worry about that this year. But, yeah, like you said, I mean, wide receiver, for the end of the day for me, and my reasoning is more special teams, because I thought for sure that with Jeremy Ross performing as horribly as he did last year, I thought that they would do something at kickoff returner, punt returner, and it would kind of involve a wide receiver role, like a Tyler Lockett or maybe even a Jamison Crowder, a guy like that, you know, with the speed that you could put into that role. And also, you know, as Mike Mayock said so eloquently, teach how to play receiver, and because he does everything else so naturally. Yeah, right. And I had them taking, actually, I had them when we were doing our mock. Trey McBride, I thought he was another guy that they could take in like the third or fourth round. Maybe not where he slipped down, but maybe, you know, middle rounds, take a flyer on him and see what he could do. But I was really stunned that they didn't even do that. So, you know, Jeremy Ross, in my opinion, his days should be numbered, if not already expired, because he was so awful last year. And I've gotten this this quote back at me a lot on Sideline. Well, the impact of the kickoff return is almost null at this point. Well, it is. But if that's the case, my counter argument is always, why are the Lions so horrible at it every year if it's not important? They're always terrible. They're always at the bottom of the league. And it's because their returners have been no good. You know, and Ross, he didn't exactly excel as a receiver either. So I thought they would do something there to kind of upgrade the team in a subtle way, so that they didn't have to entertain the thoughts of one of their starting running back, Amir Abdullah, maybe getting involved in special teams. I don't buy that'll happen. Or they didn't have to entertain the thought of putting Golden Tate back there, I mean, think about all the worst ideas in the world. I could be at the top of the worst ideas in the football world list. Let's take a wide receiver that we signed to a major contract, put him back there, and let him get hit in car crashes all the time. I mean, I don't care if Golden Tate wants to do it. I just don't think it's a good idea because I think he's going to get killed trying to do that. So, you know, why not get a guy in the middle rounds, plug him in, see what happens, and maybe you catch lightning in a bottle and it's somebody that turns into something. So I was really stunned that they didn't go with a wide receiver at some point in those, you know, 4th through 6th round area, maybe even, you know, in the 7th round, just a flyer on somebody late. But I thought for sure that they would do that, and they didn't, which stunned me. So maybe Mayhew, maybe fans, Mayhew is listening to you. Maybe he's sitting there saying, I'm not going to take another wide receiver. I'm done with that because I've gotten so much hate with, you know, regurgitated back at me through the years that I'm finished with it. I was mildly shocked that they didn't take a lineman. Like Dave said, another defensive tackle would have looked really nice. You know, you have questions about Tyron Walker. Obviously, the Lions think he's really good because if you pass on Carl Davis and Michael Bennett 3-odd times like they did, you must know something, think you know something. You know, I think they would have liked to get one more guy maybe to get Nada some rest. Because if you get him a blow, I think he can be even better late in games, which is what you really want. So there was a few head scratchers there, but I never gave a grade for the draft. I'm going to give it a B-, only because I don't know exactly what's going to happen with Alex Carter. I think that whole thing hinges on how he does, because if he turns into somebody at a cornerback, and he's got the pedigree, his father played in the NFL and flipped over to ESPN, and Trent Dilfer was going on and on about how he probably intercepted him 10 times in his career. So, I mean, he's got that NFL pedigree, and if he's able to use it, you know, I think that could turn into a really good pick. Like, I think that, you know, Diggs could be good too. So, on the whole, I think it was good. They filled needs. Couple head scratchers with Burton, but that was the main head scratcher for me. But I think that they did a pretty good job.
I mean, you know, I will say for the defensive line.
What do you think about Burton, Chris? What do you think about Burton? Was that a head scratcher?
I mean, I think the only reason it's a head scratcher is because I think you could have taken him or someone similar to him a round or two later.
Right.
They obviously wanted him specifically that player, and he's kind of. It's interesting. I think one of the really intriguing trends about the Martin Mayhew drafts and now the Martin Mayhew Jim Caldwell drafts, especially, are they always want these character guys. And Burton was a really well-respected player at Rutgers. You know, Tomlinson, lots of team captains. It's really interesting to see that happen. And I think it's another hard-nosed guy. I mean, again, they needed a fullback. He'll probably help on special teams, not as a return guy, but he'll help on special teams. And so, you know, in round 5, you're kind of starting to throw darts anyway. But again, that was a spot. Michael Bennett went like 10 picks after that. And that was a guy that I thought could have been a Lions option even in round 1 at one point. So there was talent to be had. You know, I'm not going to kill a draft because they took a fullback there. The defensive line thing's really interesting to me too. I think it shows what they've done so far, that they have a lot of confidence in Walker. I think they're expecting Caron Reed to be pretty decent, maybe get some more out of Devin Taylor. They have a pretty interesting collection of guys because Jason Jones is a guy that can slip down inside and play tackle on pass rushing downs. You know, Gabe Wright and Nada could be on the field together. Wright could be Nada's replacement. It's really kind of mix and match. They have, you know, they have 7, 8, 9 bodies that you could see. Daryl Papp's another guy I think that can do a few things up front. But they could have used another straight up pass rusher there, I think. That was the one. Not necessarily tackle. I think pass rusher. I just don't know who other than Ziggy Ansah is getting to the quarterback for him this year.
As I'm sitting here clinging to my Nolan Naraki draft guide, I'm reading a very different description of Michael Burton, that he looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane, is a typical New Jersey meathead. It was pretty stunning to read that. After everybody else says he's a high-character guy and he wins all these awards, I just laughed so hard when I read that. Who knows? Well, we'll just put a bow on the whole thing right here for the Lions draft with that. you know, definitely we'll talk more about the Lions as they push forward here, and if there is any news. I mean, Dave mentioned James Jones. You know, there's always people getting cut, signings that they made, you know, as the team rounds out its roster. And they should not. I agree with you. I agree there. They should not sign James Jones. But we'll definitely keep you updated on that on future shows. But with that, I'm going to turn it around and go towards my natural topic of comfort right here, the Detroit Tigers, who I follow regularly. Plug for myself real quick, if I do follow them regularly, so make sure to check out Tigers 101. That's where I contribute. I go to all the home games. I'm there at Comerica Park, most of all the home games that I can make. And I follow them there and then follow them like everybody else on the road from the comfort of home. But this weekend, the Tigers put a bow on their series with Kansas City, and they will look pretty lost the first two games. Blowouts, losing in blowout fashion, getting outscored. I mean, they couldn't hit, they couldn't pitch. It was just, you shake your head. But as I've learned, you kind of throw those things away and say, it's baseball, that's what happens. You can look great one day, horrible the next, and award-winning the next 3 days after that, and horrible for the next week. So who knows? But they did come back in strong fashion over the weekend, winning David Price and Anibal Sanchez's start. Sanchez took a perfect game into the sixth inning yesterday. Tigers hung on to win 6-4 after Price went nine innings the night before. So really, from where I sit, that was impressive. I thought that was very important early in the season to come back like that against Kansas City, a Kansas City team that had all kinds of confidence. Andrew, I'm going to ask you right now, considering what that trip started out to be in Kansas City, and they had won two in a row, or well, they had won two in Minnesota going in, considering what that trip started out, I mean, you can't look at anything as a negative right now, can you? Coming back, you know, going down to Chicago after winning those two games, was it a positive weekend in Kansas City, or was it a negative considering how badly they lost those first two games?
Well, I don't know. If you talk to the national media, it's like the Royals have already won the World Series with how high they have them in the power rankings. I think I learned nothing. I mean, ultimately, I walk away from that series and go, I don't know anything. I don't know who's the better team. The Tigers hit well on Sunday, but didn't hit any other day before that, and the Royals destroyed the cover off the ball the whole weekend, but really seemed to have a questionable bullpen. I've always thought it was okay, especially missing their closer. I thought was it Saturday or Friday when the Perfecto was taken into the seventh inning? That was Friday against the Tigers, and the no-hitter. They walked the bases loaded twice. I don't think I trust the Royals bullpen just as much as I don't trust the Tigers bullpen. So in terms of what I've learned, I'm serious. I mean, Herrera has always had a history of being wild. He walked a lot of guys this weekend. They're all hotheads in Kansas City. They seem to freak out about everything. And whether it's pitches close to the inside, they're a team that I think are ripe to collapse. They just need one little stretch of just awful baseball, and I think that team could totally crumble. Just the way that they've reacted to situations in games. Ventura's been in three dust-ups with different teams. Herrera threw at a guy's head at 100 miles an hour. I mean, I walked away not knowing anything. The Tigers and Royals, I think, are both teams that could collapse at a heartbeat, and I look at this Minnesota Twins team, who suddenly doesn't look like it can be stopped, sweeping the White Sox, and I do start to think, who really is the best team in the division? And do we even really know that yet? We're not even to Memorial Day, and that's usually where you learn who the best teams are. So in terms of what I've learned from the trip, minimal. Anibal Sanchez figured out how not to get home runs. I think that's the one thing that we figured out. But other than that, I don't know. I don't know if you guys have a different look at what's happened on the trip, but I'm honestly a little disappointed from what I've seen out of the team. It looks like last year, win by a lot, lose by a lot. It usually seems to be the way that it goes.
I mean, I'll say with some degree of confidence that the Minnesota Twins are not the best team in the division.
I don't think they are.
I'll just start
there. Bert Blylevin disagrees.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I don't think you learned a whole lot. I think it was important for them, as Max said, to come back, and especially to come back. We know David Price can turn in those games. I think every time Anibal Sanchez has one of those games, it's bigger and bigger for the Tigers. And he had, again, you know, for whatever reason, aside from one or two starts a year, he always has sort of that Porcello inning where everything's kind of teetering on the brink and he gives up a run or two and you kind of wondering if he's going to get through. But that was a big, big game for him to step up in and get the W, get them back into first place. That was the biggest thing for me. I don't think you take a whole lot out of it. It was nice to see the offense wake up a little bit because that had been the real struggle. And I still think this offense is going to be really good in the long run and over the course of this season. But it had struggled some, and so to have back-to-back games of fairly decent offensive performance was a nice way to close out that weekend. And, I'd say settle in. I think this is going to be Tigers and Royals for most of the year. I don't think the Twins are going to stay up there. Maybe the White Sox or Indians gets hot. I think both those teams are better than they've started, but I still don't really see either of them being as good as Detroit or Kansas City. So I think this is going to go back and forth for most of the year. And this is probably what the Tigers are right now. You kind of hope, cross your fingers, hope and pray that Shane Green and Alfredo Simon and Lobstein can hold down the fort 3-4-5 until Verlander gets back, but you're really banking on Price and Sanchez to carry you most of the way this year. So that was big to close the weekend, because if they're not showing up, you know, if you're getting the David Price versus the Yankees, this is not going to be a very good team.
Well, I think too, you're talking about a team is without JV and 100% Victor Martinez. I mean, that's the one positive, is that they've been able to play this well with missing arguably their second or third best pitcher, who's going to be well rested. I think any concerns about a lot of wear on Verlander's arm in the last year, it's going to go down. I mean, realistically, he should be able to pitch stronger later into the year, because he's not going to have thrown those pitches early in the year. And if Victor Martinez, that seems to be getting healthy, if we could get him away from that warning track power, that would be good. But, Max, you watch him closer than I do. I'm really worried about JD Martinez. He looks awful right now.
Yeah, well, that's a concern, because JD Martinez was always a guy that, you know, and I guess it kind of leads into our next point, which I'll talk about, is what you're most concerned about. But like you said, to touch on that, JD Martinez, I always had questions if he was able to sustain that. And, you know, he had this great spring training. I mean, he hit 322 last year, hit all those dingers, hit all the power. He looked great. But people tend to forget that was only half of a year of sample size. Nobody had the book on J.D. Martinez. I mean, they kind of did, but not as deep as they have it now. And they have it deep now, and I think it's showing. So I think if Martinez, I mean, he has to just be able to hit somewhere around, I would say, like 280 to 285. If he's able to hit that, he doesn't have to hit 300. If he's able to keep into the 280s, 270s, that's fine. But what you don't want to see is those 250s and 260s with a lot of strikeouts. That's tough for the offense to take. Chris brought up a great point. I mean, watching those games this week, especially the Price's start, I always like to go back. I want to go back to the start against Minnesota. That was another good start. He won that game, too. Wasn't as impressed. Didn't go nine innings, but he got the win. Sanchez, though, he lost the game against Minnesota the very next night. It was a great game. It wasn't his fault they lost. The bullpen kind of fell apart. The offense was a no-show that night. So I think you learned this week, at least I did, and I wrote about this today at Tigers 101, the importance of those two is so key right now, like Andrew said, because you've got Verlander gone. You know, Lobstein, what are you going to get from him? He's inconsistent. He can look as good as he did the last game of the homestand against Cleveland, or he can look as bad as he has in other games. Shane Green, I mean, there's no middle ground with Shane Green right now. Either he's throwing zeros and throwing darts, or every ball is leaving the yard, and you know, there's got to be a middle for him. And Simon, who I think is still good, he had his first rough start of the year, but with all that, you know, question mark hanging, can these guys be as good or be as better? You really need your horses to pitch like horses, and they did that this weekend in Kansas City, which I thought was very important to kind of serve notice. The Royals could have taken a bigger division lead. They didn't do that against the Tigers in the first series at home. I think it's a little disappointing for them, because they came in with such high hopes. And if I know anything about Kansas City, which I'm learning a little bit more as I go, those Royals people really take this series with the Tigers seriously. They want to be the top team in the Central Division. They really, you know, it bothers them when they're not able to beat the Tigers. So the fact they weren't able to get it done this weekend And I think you saw Sanchez and Price do what they have to do for the Tigers. I think that was key. Really quick, I'll touch on it first. What do you think? I mean, the question is, what do you think is, you know, the most concerning thing? I wrote about it over the weekend. I mean, we talked about it. Chris said the offense. To me, that's the biggest question mark, the offense, because what is their identity? I don't think anybody really knows at this point. They're a team that can score a lot of runs at times, then they can look just as bad. Then they can score a lot of runs or win close games with a few clutch runs, then they can be just as anti-clutch. So I think that's been my number one concern early in the year. It's just the offensive inconsistency, because for as many games as they win because of their offense, it seems that they lose just as many or close to as many because of what they're not able to do. So they need to achieve a little bit better consistency there. And I think, like we've talked about, a little bit of that has to do with Martinez coming along, J.D. Martinez, and Victor Martinez getting healthier, starting to look a little healthier now than he did. You know, Miguel Cabrera is always there. But you know those guys are going to fall back to earth. I mean, Iglesias is going to hit 300 all year. If he can keep up his end of the bargain at the bottom of the order and just punch those singles through, I think it'll help the offense stay consistent, especially at the top two with Ghost and Davis, if they continue to do the good things. But I'll ask you guys now, Chris, what are you most concerned about thus far with the Tigers? Is there something that stuck out that you look at and say, I really don't like it, or I'm concerned about it the most?
I mean, it's still the pitching for me, and that includes the starting rotation, as I just mentioned, because I think they have right now, I mean, Green and Simon are decent middle-of-the-rotation guys, but I don't know that there's anyone who can really carry that number three start into a big game and you'd totally trust right now if you needed it. So that rotation is a worry until Verlander gets back, and because you have to assume Anibal Sanchez is going to miss some time at some point, because he always misses time at some point in the season.
Yeah.
And then the bullpen, I mean, Joaquin Soria has been phenomenal. He's been everything the Tigers hoped they were getting from him when they traded for him, and certainly everything Tigers fans hoped when they said he should be closing over Joe Nathan. But I don't really know, you know, the only other guy that's been steady so far for them has been Tom Gorzolani, and that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, Joba is still up and down. Al Albuquerque is, I mean, I don't know, he's like Wild Thing Vaughn before they got him glasses in Major League. Just whipping the ball to the backstop. I don't know who else they really trust there. So,
and he also likes
maybe they get
blocks. We know that.
Yeah, maybe they get Rondon back and that helps. I still think that's the big worry, especially the bullpen. Until they get, I think they need at least one more guy in the bullpen to really feel comfortable.
You on the bullpen train, Andrew? Is it something else, offense, pitching? I mean, what's concerning you so far?
I think I've harped on him a lot for the last year and a half, but I'm still really questioning some of the managing decisions that the Tigers have had. I know Brad Austis is a young manager, and sometimes he has moments of light, and he just seems like everything falls into place, and maybe he's just a victim of bad luck, but he always seems to be either one inning too early or one inning too late to pull a guy, or he's pulled the wrong start or the wrong reliever in. And so, or the games where he'll pitch three relievers in an inning to three separate batters. And that's some of the issue I see. I mean, especially when you look at a player like James McCann, who had gotten kind of hot and then showed that he could hit righties. And then also sort of stuck by his platoon and played Avila, and it paid off Sunday. But I want to start to see the evolution of Brad Ausmus to where he starts positioning them into spots to win games, whether that's moving, you know, Angel Nesbitt into a spot where he can get big outs, or sticking with someone who's hot instead of sitting someone like Anthony Ghost forever and then, you know, comes back ice cold. I would like to see that next evolution. I think it's overblown that managers win and lose games, but I think that Ausmus has not done the best job. I think it's time to move J.D. Martinez out of the what is he hitting, the five spot now, and it's time to do different things that you've got to try when you know what you have as a team right now.
Yeah, and you're completely right. I mean, as much as Ausmus, you know, he can overmanage, he can undermanage, and I think you're right on the money with that. You're sitting at games a lot of times. I'm sitting there, and he's bringing in another reliever and bringing in another reliever, and you're going, what the heck is he doing bringing in these relievers one after another? Couldn't one guy get the job done? And also you got these guys like Ghost, like you mentioned, who had been swinging a really hot bat, doing some great things from the order. Then he sits. And then Angel Nesbitt, they put him in, and I know Osmus had told us that, you know, he was really trying to work him in and get him comfortable, but I think he's shown that he can get those outs. Why not roll with him, try him in a big spot, and then maybe you, like, you know, you create something because you give the kid confidence. I agree. I mean, I think there's some elements there where he really needs to, you know, to learn how to push the right button consistently, maybe not do too much or too little. Just find that mid-ground where you're doing everything kind of, you know, on the even keel. And I think if they're able to do that, I mean, you know, they can be as good as they were last year, if not better during the regular season. And I think they'll you know, find a measure of consistency here. But like I mentioned, I'm at the Tigers games. You know, I cover them. Tigers 101, you can follow them at Twitter at Tigers_101. And you can also like them on Facebook, Tigers 101, and head to the site, check it out. I got a lot of opinion, news, everything you want there, quotes from the man himself, Pratt Osmus, and his players, so we got it covered there. We're going to close up here for the last 5 minutes, talking about the Illich's other team just down Woodward Avenue, the Detroit Red Wings, lost, and I don't want to toot my own horn here, but I did predict that the Red Wings would lose Game 7. I wasn't happy to be right, but a little part of me felt happy that, you know, I was one of the first and only people on the history of the Detroit Sports Show to pick against the Detroit team successfully. I don't know if that qualifies me for a Drew Sharp status here yet, but whatever. But they lost. Now the question is, Mike Babcock, will he stay or will he go? Everybody's debating, will he stay or will he go? Andrew, I'm going to ask you, should he stay or should he go? What do you think?
Oh, man, I don't know. I'm so torn by this because I really think that the reason the team fell off in the second half is it has been criticized that he rides the team too hard. But then I watched the Red Wings Periscope live Babcock presser at the end of the day, and he talks about how it was the most disappointed day as a Red Wing coach. And I think Uncle Mike, don't leave. I miss your fun outbursts and ridiculous press answers. So I don't know. I do think he's sort of right on the idea that the grass is always greener on the other side. And I think that's the same with the Red Wings coach, like looking at having a different coach. It is potentially always greener, but I don't know where it is. So right now, I'll say he should stay, but I'm cautious on that.
Well, I've changed my mind I know since last week. I've changed because I thought they should let him go. And I'll be quick because we're close to the end of the show here. But I thought they should let him go if they didn't win that series. Just move a different direction. Both best for the both of them. Let Babcock go pick his spot. Let the Wings go bring up Blashill or bring in McClellan or whatever they plan to do. And now I'm sort of wondering if that was the right idea because I don't know that they'll do better. I think they're taking a step back at coach regardless of which guy they bring in next. And that's a scary thing for a team that I think has leaned on Babcock to develop a lot of young players. It hasn't worked really on defense. You know, Brendan Smith, Jakob Kindle haven't gotten any better, but we've seen a lot of these young offensive guys really come along. And I think to throw another new coach in there, you sort of risk upsetting the progress they've made so far.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I mean, I don't think, you know, I'll preface this by saying this. I don't care one way or the other what he does. Like we said last week, if they lost that game, hey, he can go if he wants. He can stay if he wants. But
yeah,
for
I
him,
agree with you
I
there.
Think he should stay. Yeah, that's. I mean, that's my opinion on it. I think if he wants to go, fine. But if he wants to stay, fine too. But for his sake, what are you really going to get if you go to Philadelphia or Edmonton or all these teams that think they're going to enter in Toronto? You're not going to get much of anything. So I think he's got it good in Detroit. And in my opinion, I think he'll realize that and come to his senses and say, look, I'm going to stay here because I've got it good here. I've got ownership that gives me what I want for the most part. I've got a general manager I can work with and a team that can sustain success. So for him, I think it would be incredibly stupid to leave. But, hey, stranger things have happened in Detroit sports, as we all know. Well, that will put a bow on this episode of the Detroit Sports Show. You can always check us on Twitter at D-Town Sports Site, like the Detroit Sports Site on Facebook. Do those things. And, guys, we'll talk to you next week. We'll break down some more Tigers baseball, I'm sure, as the Tigers will come back home and face the Kansas City Royals. So thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you later, everybody. Good night.